Welcome once again to Word on the Hills with me, Gwyn Sheltimer, my co-host Felicity Sidnell-Reed, and our guests this week, Vicky Delaney and Janet Kilo. Each week at this time, we visit authors from our area, an editor, a publisher, or other persons involved with writers and readers. And on this occasion, two fabulous impresarios. We ask them to introduce us to their work. We hope for a glimpse into their lives. We find out what prompts them to do the things they do. And we invite them to read for us and are delighted to have another visit from both Vicky and Janet. Welcome to you both.
Thank you very much for talking to us.
Thanks for having us.
Now this week we want to devote the show to Women Killing It 2019, which you founded 3 years ago and have organized together ever since. So we're going to throw out some questions to you both and see where the conversation takes us. First of all, for clarification, could you describe Women Killing It, when and where it is and what happens?
Women Killing It Crime Writers Festival in Prince Edward County was designed actually to showcase women authors working in the crime and mystery genre in Canada. And it takes place on Labor Day weekend, which this year is August 30th to September 1st. And it's in beautiful Prince Edward County, because why not? Just a great chance for people to come out and meet some really spectacular authors that maybe they've heard of, maybe they haven't, maybe they're already fans, maybe they will be.
Cool. Why did you decide to celebrate women crime writers?
Well, Janet and I are quite good friends, and one day we were sitting around griping, as writers tend to do. And in fact, all jokes aside, basically Canadian crime writers don't get much respect from the literary community. Louise Penny once said that crime writers sit at the children's table at the Canadian literary banquet. And in particular, women crime writers get remarkably little recognition. We were talking about the habit of the big literary festivals to either not generally invite crime writers, or if they do, to only invite the big bestsellers who happen to almost always and most to be men. And Janet and I felt that maybe we should do something about that. Actually, I shouldn't say Janet and I should say I am the grumbler and Janet is the doer.
I should explain that I have a background in small concert production. So I took a look at this and said, nah, there isn't anything here I haven't done before. This is cool. We can do this.
And I think that we're proud of the overwhelming response we get from the authors that we invite, as I'm sure most festivals do. We have a long list and we invite. And this year we had 100% acceptance rate. Last year, just about everybody accepted right away. So authors and they come from all across Canada, because that's the other aspect, of course. As I said, we want to showcase Canadian women, and we do want to have people from outside our own local area.
Yeah, I've seen your lists over the last couple of years. It's very impressive. Now, do you see Women Killing It as primarily a conference for writers, or and perhaps even female writers, or as a festival for readers, or maybe for both? Or
both. I mean, if you're a mystery reader or a crime reader, you can come along and you'll hear about all kinds of writers you haven't heard about before. You'll be introduced to some really wonderful works that maybe you haven't run across before. And so there is that aspect of it, that readers come and they go away with books. And oh boy, do they go away with books. Books and Company, who's the bookseller at the festival, just loves this festival because he sells so many books. People will walk away with entire series from an author. So there's that aspect of it. But one of the other things that we try to do is we try to get our authors to talk about the writing process, because I think people find that more interesting maybe than just somebody standing up and saying, this is why my book is wonderful. They like to hear about what inspires a writer, how a writer deals with, various different technical aspects. So there is that part of the festival as well. But if you're just a reader, it's okay. You'll still find it interesting.
Well, I think even as a reader, that's important. Yep. Interesting.
I maybe slightly disagree with Janet that I see it almost overwhelmingly as a festival for readers who want to meet authors, as Janet has said, and all that, and talk to them about their interest in the writing process and all that too. But what we particularly hope to offer attendees is the chance to actually talk to the writers that they may know, that they may be fans of, or new writers that they haven't heard of before, one-on-one. And intimacy is the thing we're really striving for. You're not sitting at the back of an audience of 300 people watching a little dot up at the front that might be, you know, world famous author. It's a small, intimate thing, and there's lots of chance to chat individually, one-on-one, to have your book signed and that. Having said that, we do have a stream for writers themselves because we have two workshops given by attending writers to beginning writers or writers who are maybe have started their book but are looking for some tips and some hints, some way of progressing, or also for writers that haven't quite got idea what they want to do yet, but they're looking for somebody to help them.
Yeah.
And they're welcome to come every other event as well.
Now, you started out in 2017, and even the first year was an absolutely great success. I was there. So tell us how this event has expanded.
2017 was really interesting because we had no idea what the response was going to be. It was just, we're going to do this. And what happened was we were almost too successful. One of the things that we do is four of the authors are showcased at a tea, which takes place in the afternoon, and that's really designed for kind of lighter fare and the people who don't like to drive at night and things like that. I'd booked it at Macaulay House, which is a historic home in Picton. They have a meeting room there that it's nice and the gardens are lovely, and I thought, okay, this will be cool. Man, the place was crammed. We had them practically sitting out on the lawn. So it was like, I think we're going to need a bigger room. So we had to kind of, you know, switch gears between the first one and the second one and start looking for different venues.
And I think the workshop was kind of like that too, wasn't it?
We had one workshop,
Mary Jane Maffini gave it, and it was a matter of us setting our number of people that would, you know, would be allowed to buy tickets. And then, well, you know, so-and-so wants to come, so we'll let them in. Oh, well, yeah, bring your friend. We'll let you in, too. And I heard, and I believe it might have even been you, Gwen, who told me that you didn't have any elbow room on the desk, that you couldn't really even make notes. So what we then did is we've added a second workshop, and we have also stuck to our cap. We're selling this certain number of tickets, 15 tickets for each workshop this year, and that's going to be it. We're not going to, as much as we'd like to squeeze more people in, it's not fair to the people.
We'll just have to add more workshops, that's all.
Well, yeah. You can always do that, too.
Having said that, I think one of the things that we're agreed on is that it's going to stay small venue, and if the enthusiasm keeps growing for the festival, we will add more events rather than going and looking for bigger rooms, because that's the one thing that we really want to preserve is this idea that you can sit at a table with an author.
Yes,
and
I
just
agree with you.
Talk, but you get to sit with the author.
Yeah, you get to meet the person behind the story.
That's
right. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Well, I know you've got a lot of exciting writers coming to take part this year, but before we get to your guests, perhaps you could do a reading for us, because that's what we always do on this program. You're going to go first, Janet?
Sure.
Tell us what you're going to read.
This is from The Untoward Assassin, which is a Thaddeus Lewis novel. It's the seventh book in the series. And Thaddeus has ended up back in Toronto, and he's met up with his old friend Morgan Spicer. And one of the things that Morgan is doing is he is working for the House of Industry and going out into the community and looking for people who need charitable relief, whether that's food or coal or whatever. And one day Thaddeus goes with him. The next day, Thaddeus once again collected Morgan Spicer, and together they set off for St. John's Ward. In spite of the fact that their mission was to search out the city's most desperate people, Thaddeus enjoyed being an unofficial assistant visitor for the House of Industry. He liked being out and about with Morgan, and the work gave him a sense of purpose that was, at the moment, lacking in his life otherwise. As soon as they reached the edge of Macaulay Town, they were hailed by a boy of 10 or so, whose clothes consisted more of holes than cloth. Spicer frowned. "Where's Bucky?" he asked. "He's working today, over at the dock," came the reply. "He said to tell you there's an old couple who needs some help. They got nobody to look after him now that their son's been killed by a runaway horse. They're both so old they can't work no more, and now they're starving." The boy didn't know, however, exactly where the old couple was sheltering. "Somewhere over in that block," he said, pointing to a particularly decrepit pile of buildings, parts of which had collapsed and parts of which had been built over and added to until their yards had nearly disappeared. "I've only ever seen them shuffling along the street looking for scraps in the garbage heaps, but I'm pretty sure they have a room there somewhere." Morgan handed the boy a penny. Sounds like they need to be brought in, he said to Thaddeus, provided, of course, we can get them to agree. Thaddeus followed Spicer into a warren of back alleys, where a multitude of doorways opened onto the narrow laneways. They were soon disoriented from the twists and turns they took. Only a feeble sunlight filtered down from the sky above, and the buildings cast odd shadows that further confused the search. Thaddeus stopped at one opening in the wall beside him. It could scarcely be called a door. There was no covering of any description. "Hello?" he called, but no one answered. "If you'll check the rooms along this lane, I'll go ahead and see where it comes out," Spicer said. Thaddeus stuck his head through the door, but he couldn't see much of anything. Unless someone made a noise or moved, it was impossible to tell if there was anyone in there at all. He had just turned back to the alley when, out of nowhere, he felt a sharp blow strike the back of his head. He staggered, regained his balance for a moment, then his vision blurred, and he dropped to his knees. He was aware that he had shouted, but for some reason it sounded as though it was a long way away. And then he fell into a blackness that was far deeper than any of the shadows in the alleyway.
Okay, Vicky, what are you going to read for us?
Okay, I thought I'd read a short section from A Scandal in Scarlet, which is the fourth in the Sherlock Holmes bookshop series. This series is not only does the character own the Sherlock Holmes bookshop and emporium, but she herself is the Sherlockian character. So basically it's my reinterpretation of Sherlock Holmes in a modern young woman. And as we all know, Sherlock Holmes was a master of disguise. So at this point in A Scandal in Scarlet, Gemma Doyle is off to do some investigating. At 3 o'clock, I climbed the 17 steps to my office. I did not plan on going to the Cape Cod Yacht Club as myself. Using the things I'd brought from home, I went to a great deal of trouble to prepare for the visit. When I came back down, the bottom step creaked under my weight, as it always does, and Ashley looked up. "You can't go up there," she said to me. "The second floor is private." Moriarty arched his back and hissed. Ashley put her hand on his back. "Sorry, he's usually quite friendly. Can I help you find anything?" "Do you have From Holmes to Sherlock by Matthias Bostrom?" I asked. "Yes, we do." She came out from behind the counter. "It's over here." She crossed the floor to the nonfiction section, and I followed, trying not to trip on the unaccustomed high heels. Moriarty jumped off the counter and bolted for his bed beneath the center table. Ashley put her hand on the volume in question and began to draw it out. "Are you looking for a book for yourself or for a gift? We have a good selection of..." "Don't bother," I said in my normal voice. She whirled around. "Gemma? The one and only? What the heck? I'm off to the yacht club. I'd prefer not to be recognized. Pop into the tea room and tell Jane I won't make our regular meeting, please." "Carry on." I went out the back door to the parking spot in the alley where I'd left the Miata, feeling rather pleased with myself. As I told Ashley, I didn't want to be recognized. It's not as hard, I have found, as some people might think, to dramatically change one's appearance. People expect to see what they expect to see. A gray blonde wig, a pair of giant sunglasses, a bit of makeup to add lines to the edge of my mouth and nose, a silk scarf around the throat to hide the lack of loosening skin, the sort of clothes I'd normally never be caught dead in, shoes with higher heels than I ever wear to add height, and a bit of padding to my chest and hips. All that, plus an upper crust New York accent, and we have a wealthy widowed lady in her well-preserved 50s, recently moved to West London from Manhattan and hoping to join a yacht club for the social life. My disguise might make me look a bit plumper than is fashionable among wealthy East Coast women, but I can't make myself look thinner than I am, nor can I become shorter, so I had to add weight and height.
Lots of fun. Okay, well, thank you to you both.
You're very welcome.
Thank you.
We've been speaking with Janet Kelo and Vicky Delaney about the Festival of Women Crime Writers, Women Killing It, and we'll talk to them again after this short break.